All right, welcome to another podcast of BibleTruthOnline.com. And today we're continuing on with our Hebrews Bible study podcast. And we will be reading Hebrews chapter 5, 6, and 7. And these three chapters are interesting because they mention throughout Melchizedek. And Melchizedek was a paper that we wrote on our site explaining who we think Melchizedek is. And I think it'd be important to run through our paper so that we can grasp the significance of who Melchizedek is before we actually read the verses in Hebrews. So let's talk about it. Melchizedek, in many churches, is not defined. It seems to be almost a mysterious person, a high priest that lived once. No one knows where he's from, just like in Hebrews we'll read in a little bit. No one knows who his father or mother is. But yet, we know that the Word of God, there's answers to be found. And what we did a while back is answer the question, who is Melchizedek? Interesting thing we found is in Jewish tradition, that the Jews have a tradition that Melchizedek was Shem. That was interesting for the sole reason of Shem being the one that carries the righteous line through the three sons of Noah after the flood. So I guess we'll start on going through our paper. We took every verse found in the Bible that mentions Melchizedek. And we have the first mention of Genesis chapter 14, verse 18. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High. Significant point on that is, in Genesis, in the three chapters before, you have the three sons of Noah, the descendants of those three sons, ending with Abram, who's not yet Abraham. And all of a sudden, the first mention in the Bible of Melchizedek comes with Abram. So we know that all the people that have now populated the earth from after the flood through the three sons have already been mentioned. But suddenly we get this verse 18. This person is called Melchizedek.
I think we should interject here too, that what we're really talking about here too also is, we're talking about 10 generations.
Right.
That's as far as we've gone. If you go from Shem up to Abraham, it's 22, 12. That's all it is.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of people, but there's only 10 generations.
Right. So that's a simple point to make with the Genesis Melchizedek mention. Out of nowhere, that name comes. Understanding that, you read in Hebrews, Melchizedek later is the king of righteousness and king of peace. If this Melchizedek is Shem, that makes sense. Being the king of righteousness and king of peace, he is the one that comes through the flood with the righteous line after the world's been destroyed, and carries on that lineage from that point on.
It is also through his lineage that Abraham comes.
Right.
It's not one of the other two brothers. It is from him.
Exactly. The next verse in the Bible that pops up is Psalm 110, verse 4. And that is, the Lord has sworn and will not relent. You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. The reason we put that in there is Hebrews quotes that psalm. So that's why it's in there. Then we jump to Hebrews in the New Testament, chapter 5, verse 6. And that says, as he also says in another place, you are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. Again, Hebrews chapter 5, verse 6 is quoting Psalm chapter 110, verse 4. The second mention in Hebrews is chapter 6, verse 20, where the forerunner has entered for us, even Jesus, having become high priest forever to the order of Melchizedek. Then we have a mention of Hebrews chapter 7, verse 1, then verses 9 through 11. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him. Even Levi, who receives tithes, paid tithes through Abraham, so to speak. For he was still in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him. Therefore, affection were through the Levitical priesthood. For under it, the people received the law. What further need was there that another priest rise according to the order of Melchizedek, and not according to the order of Aaron. And I'm going to stop right there, because reading Hebrews, why is Paul saying that Jesus is in the order of Melchizedek? And we're telling you that Melchizedek is Shem, and that Jesus is not part of the Levitical line. He's part of the line of Melchizedek.
He's in a line that is, from Aaron up, every person in that line is subject to that law. Mm-hmm. Everybody before that Moses law. You gotta put Moses law in perspective as to what's going on. Before Moses, there is no law. You know, there are, God said this and God said that, but Moses is, you know, the time of Aaron, and it's that line right there. You get past before Abraham, everybody did as he thought he should.
Right.
So that's that Shem kingdom, that time of Shem, that time of Melchizedek, if you look at it, that's completely different than when you get to Abraham. It's at Abraham when God starts putting some pieces back together.
And I see Hebrews 7, verses 11, what Paul's saying. If perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, which is true. We have Moses, right? The law and then the Levites. What further need was there that another priest should rise according to the order of Melchizedek and not according to the order of Aaron? But where I'm just going to go with that is something that we've discussed. Under the law, you try to follow the law and reach perfection, and you're not going to do it. Before this, you had the flood destroying the world, and the promise to Noah that your descendants shall populate the whole earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of this is happening before Abraham, and this is way before Moses comes on the scene. You don't see any of the offerings, sacrifices being mentioned from Noah's three sons up to Abraham. Abraham's the first one to build these altars. So what is the pure priest line? You see it coming right after the flood. It has nothing to do with the law, failures of the Levitical priests in the Old Covenant. This was a time in the world when the world was destroyed, had to start over. The Creator chose to do that, who is Jesus. Saves the human lines through Noah, and Shem is given that righteous line.
Well, you know, it's funny, too, because you got these other three sons, like we've been talking about. They don't all stay together. Everybody splits and goes out into the world. They're not coming back together for church. You know? I don't think people really get that. Repopulating the world, you're Daniel Boone going through the wilderness, stopping to make a church every Sunday along the way. No, you're traveling. You're going.
Yeah. So why would Abraham pay tithes to Shem? Or this Melchizedek? See, it makes sense if you call him Shem. Let's say Melchizedek's a mysterious man that no one knows about, a big Bible mystery, big mystery in the churches. Well, no one knows who Melchizedek is. So no one knows who he is. We'll just leave that alone. But he was so important that Abraham had to pay tithes to him.
Well, it depends on which way you want to go with it, because there are stories about Abraham's childhood where he does things. As a child, he chases away crows. He does this. He gets into an argument with the king. The king threatens to kill him. And then he leaves, and he goes to older relatives. Mm-hmm. And these older relatives are Noah and Shem. That's where he learns faith.
Right.
Okay? He comes back to his father's house, who is a idol maker. Okay? After being with Noah and Shem, Abraham looks and goes, these are not gods. He destroys them, and then he gets sent on his way.
Right.
Now, Abraham has a brother, there's him, and his father. He takes all three of them away with him, though the brother stays there. Okay? He does come represented in the fact that he takes Lot with him. He goes out so far, the father stops, they stay there for a while. When his father dies, then Lot and him go away again. Okay, as they're traveling through, it comes to the point where Lot and him separate from each other. Abraham goes one direction, Lot goes the other way, and Lot ends up going over to where Sodom and Gomorrah is. Mm-hmm. Okay? But that Abraham line is still, you know what, he's still doing what Shem, Japheth, and Ham were doing. He's still moving out to capture the country.
I think one thing that makes it such a mystery of who this Melchizedek is that nobody dives into this point because nobody looks at the genealogies. Nobody really dives in it. I know we're going to get into that in a little bit, but when you realize that Shem and Noah are still alive at the time of Abraham, because of the age length, time is so much longer back then.
Only with those two. Not with everybody else.
Yeah. They lived 10 generations.
I think what's more, just as important as how long they live is how short everybody else lives. Mm-hmm. Because we're talking about, okay, Noah's the father, Shem's the son. What about the next one? He's long gone.
It drops down.
And the one after that. No, I'm saying by the time you get to Abraham, those people are all dead.
Yeah.
Okay? That son of Shem, he's dead. The son of that son is dead. All these other people, though they lived a long time, they're all dead. Okay, Noah has outlived all these people. When you get to Abraham, who's left? Abraham's father? Right. Abraham's father, if you look in the story, he's about to die.
Right.
Okay, what about Abraham's father's father?
He dies.
He's already gone.
He dies real early.
Okay, and all these other people that everyone thinks that lived such a long time, nobody gets the point that after the flood, nobody lives 900 years again. Nobody's close.
And then let me take a couple questions that we've gotten on our site on who people think Melchizedek is. Melchizedek is Jesus Christ, is one of the answers. So in Genesis, you go through all these people, the Noah's three sons' genealogies, and then what I just said, the mentioning of Genesis chapter 14, verse 18. So Jesus all of a sudden appears, just for a split second, brings out bread and wine, and tells this to Abraham, and then disappears again. It makes no sense.
You know, that's not, you can tell that's not the story. If you go to when the three walk up to Abraham later on,
right,
and they tell Sarah that she's going to have a child, okay, Abraham doesn't recognize them.
I mean, I can see the correlation with King of Peace, King of Salem. Jesus is, well, the creator, and he's up in heaven, so heaven's peaceful. Okay, so here we have Melchizedek. No one knows who he is. King of Salem, which means King of Peace. Well, this must be Jesus. Man, that's really putting things together and jumping to a whole bunch of conclusions.
Especially when there's other facts, because
right. Why
didn't Abraham, when they came up to tell Sarah she was going to have a child, why didn't Abraham come up and go, Melchizedek, how's it been, man? Long time no see. Where are we at?
Exactly.
Okay, because we already had this conversation.
Because that was the pre-incarnated Christ.
That is Christ,
and that conversation before Sodom and Gomorrah.
Okay, because remember the two angels go off to Sodom and Gomorrah, and Jesus is there with them, and they're talking with Abraham? Then they've already met.
Yeah.
And it's,
there's no mention of a past contact.
Right.
That's a really good point.
And there's some, you know, there's some confusion. It might be unclear, well, why are we mentioning in Genesis Shem's descendants, and all of a sudden you guys claim that the first mention of Melchizedek in chapter 14, verse 18, is Shem. Why wouldn't they just call him Shem there? What I'm saying is that Melchizedek is a title, a title given to Shem because of who he is.
Right. Jesus was never named the Christ.
Right.
Okay, that's a title. Okay, nobody was named Dr. John. Okay, doctor's the title, John was the person.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah. And then mention, well, why would Paul in Hebrews talk about Melchizedek? The thing with Paul is that he's a Pharisee. I'm telling you that Jewish tradition, known thing to them that Melchizedek is Shem, when you know this, that Paul knows that fact, he's almost digging at the people he's talking to, which are the Hebrews, the Semites. And I want to talk about that in just a moment.
Yeah.
It was a known tradition among Jews. Today, we don't have that. All of us in this room did not start off as a Pharisee and then become Christian. We had other means of education. Paul had that knowledge. There was that knowledge that was prevalent in these times after Jesus because the Jews were around. I mean, Christ just came and ascended. Christianity was new. We've lost this knowledge. It's very hard for people to research.
Well, you got to remember,
in the Old Testament, this knowledge that existed.
Going back to the Old Testament times, when you come back from captivity, You can only get back in with proof of your genealogy. Okay? You come back and go, hey, you know, I used to live here. And they're like, well, too bad.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. That's the only way you are of this community is your genealogies. That's why the genealogies are so important to them. That's why they have all these records. It's because you're not a Jew without them.
So let's talk about that comment right there. And this is another huge point to back up who Melchizedek is. We call, and this might sound ridiculous, but this is true, we call Jews Jews. Okay? That's not correct. It's not a correct terminology to call someone a Jew. What you're saying is that person comes from the tribe of Judah. There are more tribes than just Judah, okay?
Well,
so what do Jews today, and I'm going from this point on use the correct term, wish to be called as a Semite? You hear you're anti-Semitic? Well, we say you're anti-Jewish. I just told you that Jews mean tribe of Judah. A Jew encompasses all 12 tribes. Right? This is what they're talking about. We know it's not true. Tribes of Judah and Benjamin are where the Jews are today. But a Jew wants to be called a Semite. And the meaning of the word Semite is simple. A descendant of Shem. To be a Semite is to be a descendant of Shem.
A Shemite.
Meaning not a descendant of Japheth,
right,
and not a descendant of Ham.
Or not even a descendant of Abraham.
Well,
we're
not even to that point yet.
Right.
Okay, but first we just cut off 2/3 of the world. Mm-hmm. And now we're still coming.
Mm-hmm. So your proper terminology is that you are a Semite. And if you're against Semites, you're anti-Semitic. And that means you're against those descendants of Shem, which is everyone. I mean, really, it's Gentiles, it's Arabs who later become Muslims, and it's Jews at this point, because this is before Abraham.
Yeah.
So a Semite knows that who's their father. Their father is Abraham. Interesting. You also have the same thing. Islam says our father is Abraham. You know, all people from that point spring forward. But the terminology itself is out of all the people, of all the three sons of Noah and the descendants of those three sons, to properly call a Jew would be to call them a Semite, a descendant of Shem. That's significant.
I would like to make a point real quick I don't think we made on our website that a lot of Christians get confused by. You know, the question of, is Abraham a Jew? No, he's not.
Right.
He predates Jews. Abraham is a Hebrew. He's a Semite. But Jews don't come until Judah.
Is a person of Japheth a Hebrew?
No.
No. Is a person of Ham a Hebrew?
No.
Right.
No. Is Adam a Hebrew?
No.
No. He's too far back.
Yeah.
So was Adam Jewish? No.
Yeah.
That line isn't there yet. And people just slur these things all together. They don't know where the lines are.
Yeah, the 24 elders, ending with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, there's no Jews at that point.
Absolutely.
Shem is not a Jew.
This is where you get the rabbis and you get of today even trying to change that. Well, we don't practice. To practice Judaism, you're saying you're practicing the religion of your tribe of Judah? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Even though the modern-day Jew themselves, it's easy for them to think that way. But when you get into particulars, like we're just saying, where does the Hebrew line start? You know, where is Shem at? And why are you calling yourself a Shemite?
Mm-hmm.
A Semite? Why are you calling yourself a Hebrew? And then where was the first time a Jew was called a Jew?
Right. Well, see, that's
important.
During
the war, when the opposing side was attacking them,
and
they
that opposing
them Judahites.
That opposing side that was attacking them was their other 10 brothers.
Right.
Okay? It's not the heathen world that is calling Jews Jews. It's the tribe of Joseph.
The northern tribes.
It's the tribe of Reuben. It's those people who are calling them Jews. The Jews don't name themselves Jews.
Right.
It's these other 10 brothers who name them.
Very interesting, just terminology. So now, in our paper, we went through the trouble, I mean, because it took a while, to actually show you the lineage in Genesis chapter 11, verses 10 through 26. There's a lengthy lineage of the genealogy of Shem that's found in there. And a lot of people, of course, want to read it, breeze over it, can't understand it, move on. Well, it's mentioning a genealogy for a reason. And what we do is we broke it down by each son, how long they lived, and we threw in what the age of Shem was at the time that son was born. Because we arrive at a truth. And let's just go through that. That we realize that 500 years after the flood, Shem dies at 602. Okay? 602 years old. So Shem actually lives through the next nine or ten generations. And one of the points that we wanted to make there is 10 generations. How many of us know? And by the way, we live a lot shorter than these people did. So the people of today, it should be a lot easier for us to know who our great-great-great-great-great-grandfather is by name. Do you know his first name? I don't.
You don't even know your grandmother's maiden name. I mean, you only go back a few generations, everything's lost.
I just said 5 generations back. We're talking about 9 or 10. And these people lived a long time. They didn't live at, died at 60 years old or 70 years old. These people lived quite a long time. They had even a harder time knowing what their family lineage was. Thankfully, Genesis, and there's reasons for why these genealogies exist, mapped them out. Because, of course, to Semites, genealogies, like we said, are very important. They want to know who you came from, who your father was, right? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, what son of Noah do you originate from?
Yeah.
That's all very important to them.
Yeah.
So they kept very careful records of it. But at the time, think about Shem and his age. He's lived through 9 or 10 generations. At that point, you want to call someone an elder? I mean, Shem is someone, he's an elder. Not only is he knowledgeable, he's gone through the flood with his father Noah. He experienced that.
He predated the flood.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course you're going to give it. Why wouldn't you give someone of that stature a title?
Well, you better give them something. Because it's
out
like
of respect.
Here, if you look at our little chart here, you can look it up online in that. But we got the chart going at the bottom from Abram. Mm-hmm. Now, in this story, Abraham's father, Terah, dies. Okay? Shem is still there.
Yep.
Okay? Did Terah know Shem? Who knows? Going back one more, Nahor is long gone. Before the story ever starts, he's long gone. Who's going to know the parents of Shem?
Right.
Do you think Sherub does? The father of the great-great-grandfather?
Right.
Okay, as you start going back, all these people that would know anybody, they're all dead.
Exactly.
I don't think the point ever gets through as to how many generations Shem buries.
Yeah.
Okay, not just how long he lives, but how many generations he buries. Of course you don't know the beginning. Your great-great-great-grandfather didn't know the beginning.
Right.
You got to go back all this way. And all these other people, they're all gone.
Another point, according to the lineage, does Shem outlive Abraham?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's a huge point right there.
Abraham,
the father of Arabs and Semites or Jews, whatever you want to call where we're at now with that, their father is dead. Shem's still alive.
Well, Abraham's going to be gone. If you trace Shem out, you're going to come out to that he knew the boys of
Jacob.
Ishmael and Isaac.
Right.
So you get all the way out to there.
You probably met Jacob and may have even met some of the 12 brothers. I don't know if you guys know that.
No, he doesn't get out that far.
Yeah. But he gets up to right around
Jacob's
birth.
Jacob and Esau.
Yeah.
So,
let's go to that point. When we're talking about Shem, when we're talking about Abraham, we're talking about how many generations he married. Abraham's going to be buried, and Shem's still going to be meeting generations.
Right.
Even past this story.
Right.
Yeah, I like a point you made a long time in the past that Shem probably attended Abraham's funeral.
Oh, yeah.
That's just wild.
Yeah.
And think that your grandfather 10 generations back attended your
funeral. Yeah, no one doesn't make it that far, but Shem does.
Yeah.
Shem does.
No one makes it long enough to talk with Abraham, But not that far.
Yeah. So, I want to reinforce one more point. Who's Melchizedek? Go and research it online. And it's a bunch of just nonsense. It's nonsense.
No, nobody's close. Nobody's got any of the facts.
It's pulling together and doing your research of what the Semites have in their traditions, because they base a lot of their stuff off the Old Testament. They would be the closest to knowing. And then looking at the genealogy lines, taking some time to map it out and realizing the facts at hand. And then having this knowledge going forth with the belief that Shem is Melchizedek, and then reading Hebrews and getting some new insight into what Paul's talking about. And it starts to come together. And I've heard sermons on chapter 5, 6, and 7, and we're not alone in saying that. I've heard it before. I think we're the only ones that really did the work to show you on paper using genealogies and proving it that way, that Shem's Melchizedek. It's out there. But a lot of people do not have that knowledge. And Hebrews 5, 6, and 7, those three chapters, seem to be totally mysterious. What is this Paul talking about?
And you're never going to get it until you start putting the fact together as, who is this Melchizedek? So what is Paul talking about?
Right. So that's our paper. And now I feel confident we can go into Hebrews 5, 6, and 7 and read it with the knowledge of that we've just explained to you. And let's get some insight there.